say the date. It's the 11th, and this is the Joint Interim Task Force on High School and Transition Success for Students with Disabilities. And like we always do, maybe we could just briefly start, say who we all are that are here. We all know people now, but it's always good to do that. You want to start, Sarah?
Sure. I'm Sarah Mendez, Southfield High School, registrar.
Brian Agaski, special ed teacher at South Eugene High School.
Sarah Gelser, state rep from Corvallis.
I'm Victoria Cox. I'm the administrator.
Michael Dembro, state senator for District 23. That's northeast, southeast Portland.
Matt Boring, principal, Corvallis High School.
Susan Deegan, Oregon Student Access Commission.
Clint DeLongfree, vocational rehabilitation counselor.
Jan McComb, Oregon Department of Education.
And Zoe's back there. So today was kind of a cleanup day, and some of our work ended up getting taken away from us yesterday, which was a good thing. And that had to do with the conversation we've been having around students' access to financial aid with modified or extended diplomas. And the department was able to announce yesterday that that problem is now fixed. So we were going to talk about how to advocate to make sure that the department fixed that problem, but they just did it. And we have a brief PowerPoint to explain it. Is it possible to pull that up?
Yep.
Thanks. And that way, when people are asking you questions, you can explain why this is true. I know I had a call this morning from the Oregonian reporter because somebody had put a comment on the article saying, it's irresponsible of you to post this and get people's hopes up when the actions haven't been taken. Because it kind of seems too good to be true that this could happen without anybody having to do anything. But it is, in fact, the truth. So this is a presentation that Sarah and Derek, who've both been to us before, and Michelle gave yesterday to the State Board, and I won't do it as well as Sarah, but I'll do my best. Do you click or do I click? How does it? Is there
a
clicker?
You need to do it from over there.
Okay, sorry. So we've already talked about this, that Oregon has a menu of diploma options. This was a really key thing. Senator Merkley's staff and I had the chance to meet with some officials at the U.S. Department of Education 3 weeks ago yesterday. It was the Office of Post-Secondary, their Assistant Secretary, the Assistant Secretary for the Office of Special Education Rehabilitation Programs, and some of their legislative liaisons. And one of the things that they explained to us was that the federal government doesn't define what a high school diploma is. Each state decides for themselves what a high school diploma is. And they said that's one of the reasons why there's such a wide variation from state to state about their four-year graduation rate. So, yes, our four-year cohort rate, which people have talked about a lot, their frustration with who's included in a four-year cohort rate. In some states, their modified diplomas are built into their regular diplomas, so those kids are counted towards their four-year cohort rate. And they indicated that there are some states that just say a modified diploma is a diploma, or even a certificate of attendance is a diploma, and so they post like 96% graduation rates, which the U.S. Department of Education was not promoting as a good solution, and they certainly weren't urging us to do that, but it was just to illustrate the point that the state gets to make the decision of whether or not something is a diploma. And what they could see, I took the ODE spreadsheet that shows Oregon diploma options, and it lists what these different diplomas are, and that each of ours requires that a student demonstrate knowledge and skills to transition successfully to post-secondary and work, that there are these high standards and statewide standards. That was the other thing that the U.S. Department of Education said, is that typically, and that this might be why that prior guidance was sent, if the question was just asked, does a modified diploma count for financial aid? And when that question was sent, it was before the ability to benefit test went away, so the stakes weren't as high. But there's an understanding generally of what a modified diploma is historically, something a school district just does. That's different than what Oregon has done, where it's a statewide standard. And that idea of a diploma is it's sanctioned by the state, there are requirements that are consistent from district to district across the state, and it is a diploma that is recognized by the state. And this goes back through the problem with financial aid, that previously students could access that post-secondary aid even if they didn't have a standard high school diploma through the ability to benefit test, or you could also pay for or find another way to pay for 6 credits. And after you successfully completed those 6 credits, you could then get the financial aid. And as Susan gave the presentation last time, that went away starting on July 1st of 2012. So Sarah described again the Oregon Modified Diploma yesterday to the State Board. It does include specific eligibility, and the U.S. Department of Education pointed out that the other thing the Oregon Modified Diploma has going for it is that you do have to demonstrate your essential skills to get your Modified Diploma in reading, math, and writing, although you might modify the way that you do that. So it's very consistent with a diploma. But that information was not discussed when that prior guidance was issued in 2009. So we just talked about all of that. So the new guidance and clarification over the last couple of weeks from OSEP is that the student must have a certificate of graduation from a high school providing secondary education, which is a high school diploma, and an Oregon modified diploma and extended diploma is included in that definition. That the high school diploma is the basic qualification awarded to students who graduate after completing formal instruction. You can't get a modified or an extended diploma unless you have completed that course of study and you've had formal instruction. And if your school leaving document meets those criteria, you can use that to meet the eligibility requirements to apply for financial aid. So as a result, the Oregon diploma, the modified diploma, and the extended diploma are all eligible for state financial assistance for college, federal assistance for college, and to apply for the military. It requires no further action from the Department of Education, from the executive branch, or the legislature. It just is. It is retroactive, so any student that earned a modified or an extended diploma in the last 2 years when that ability to benefit test went away, those students are now eligible to go back and apply for financial aid. So we talked at a previous meeting, a couple of kids that were accepted to Gallaudet and could not go, they can now go and reapply for financial aid. We haven't been able to find out yet what happens. You talked about the student who then had to pay back.
Yeah, that happened right in 2012, right when the world changed.
So I don't know what happens with that.
I honestly don't know either. We'd have to go back and see if we can find those students.
And then the benefits of the modified diploma now are you get to walk in your graduation ceremony. You are a high school graduate. Even with this change, it does not change the ability for 18 to 21-year-olds to continue working toward a standard diploma or access transition services until they've earned a standard diploma. You can join the workforce before, you can have a sense of accomplishment before, but now you are eligible for that federal aid in addition to the state and local aid. This was a slide that was presented by a teacher from Ashland that was talking about the increased number of students who are earning modified diplomas because of the more rigorous standards and the implementation of the essential skills, and how this will be important for those students as well to be able to move on. This will also allow kids, if they're ready, to move on and go on to a community college or go on to a university, to not have to stay for a fifth year in order to be able to do that, and it will remove that stigma of that fifth year, and it will allow us to better personalize education for students because that barrier is gone. So the bottom line is it's done. It's a done deal. All these kids can apply to the military and apply for financial aid. Any questions?
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for your perseverance with this. It's a huge thing.
Exciting thing.
Yeah.
And Sarah Drinkwater and Rob and Nancy were really focused and committed to doing this. Natalie, who is the young woman that came and talked to us a couple of meetings ago, following that meeting, she met personally with the governor and with Nancy. Nancy has talked about Natalie in every meeting that I've been with since that time. This issue doesn't fix the problem that Natalie talked about. If you are pursuing a standard diploma and you haven't been made eligible for a modified diploma, and you don't do an essential skill, now you have no diploma. So that's a problem that we need to continue working towards. We have been able to change the law so that students like Natalie will be able to use their accommodations to demonstrate their essential skills. So that should help. In fact, it's helped Natalie. She retook one of her essential skills, and she passed it about 2 weeks ago, which was a really exciting thing for her. But after we got this information at that meeting, the other thing that happened at that meeting, you may remember Jamie Dunphy, who came to our first meeting from Senator Merkley's office. He had collected this giant stack of letters. Some of you had written those letters, and we were able to take those with us to that meeting. The governor signed a letter as well. Rob Saxon and Sarah Drinkwater signed a letter. And then once they communicated that, Sarah Drinkwater was on the phone and got that written guidance with the goal of being able to do something by the state board acting yesterday. And I was so grateful to Rob and Sarah and Nancy for was that if we had needed to do something or the state board had needed to do something, they were really committed to doing whatever it took to make it work for the kids that were graduating this year. So lots of people really worked on getting this done. And the next step is the department is working on a communication plan to get that information out to districts. The challenge is that for the last several years, districts and families and teachers have received written guidance that have said they are not eligible for financial aid. And people will probably need to hear it a few times before they believe it, and it sinks in that it's really true. So please talk about it and share it. The department will be issuing written guidance soon.
Will that include the information that was presented at this presentation here? I just know that for military, when they want us to sign off that the students received a standard diploma or not, and we say no, they had a modified diploma, almost every single time they'll just say absolutely not, we won't take it. So do we have something that we can show them? At least I know for my school that's happening right now for students who are wanting to graduate and go into the military immediately following June.
So I think that's a question for Sarah. The way that Sarah described it yesterday is that the question is if you've graduated with a diploma. And the way that Sarah, and correct me if I say this the wrong way, but I noticed that the way that Sarah talked about it yesterday was that Oregon has a menu of diploma options that the state recognizes as diplomas. And it recognizes three diplomas, a modified diploma, an extended diploma, and a standard diploma. And those are in our statute, they are in our achievement compact, and they're in our rule as diplomas. So a student can truthfully say, yes, I've earned a high school diploma in Oregon. Does that?
Yeah, that answers my question. Yes, thank you.
Does that seem like an accurate retelling?
Yes.
Okay. Hi, Morgan. Any other questions on?
You mentioned in there really quick that laws were changed to access accommodations for essential skills. What specific accommodations or what changed on that, or where is that published or kind of released?
So that was in House Bill 4150.
Yes.
House Bill 4150, which people mostly talked about as the bill that addressed House Bill 2220, the proficiency bill. But we added in language that said a student who is demonstrating their essential skills has to be allowed to use any accommodation that was on their IEP or 504 plan and was allowed to be used to earn a regular credit. So if it was used and the credit you got was a modified credit, you may not be able to use it.
That would mean that a student taking the reading test would be able to have a reader.
Yes. And the statute specifically says including but not limited to text-to-speech and speech-to-text.
Yeah.
So that is that's in the statute. That had an emergency clause, so that is in effect today. And
but there is no change to the OAKS system to put a screen reader over top of OAKS.
No, and you might
and
use
so
this.
So you're going to use a human reader.
And it might not be on the OAKS. So to demonstrate the essential skills, you can either do it on the OAKS or next year on the Smarter Balanced, or you can
do your work sample. So you could have a human reader, or you could scan that and have it read like that through a PDF.
Because the standardized test will still always have to comply with whatever the consortium has determined is that menu of accommodations. Or
there was a new word yesterday, support.
Yeah, there's a new word that's coming, but it's not changing the accommodations. But if you can't get that on the Smarter Balanced or the OAKS this year, the student can do it in that alternative way and access those pieces. You know, when Natalie came and talked to us on the writing sample, she was doing a different writing sample. She was doing that alternative piece, but she wasn't able to use that text-to-speech because there was confusion about whether that was an accommodation or a modification. It's now clear that because it was on her IEP and because it counted towards a regular credit, she can use that as an accommodation to demonstrate her essential skill moving forward. Well, and you guys all did that. It's been a good outcome of having a group of people to be able to talk about things. And it makes more important, kind of moving back into the agenda, the work on the transcripts becomes really key on that, to know what is a regular credit and what's a modified credit. So if a student, for instance, is working on a regular diploma or a modified diploma and they need a modified credit in one area, maybe in math, we wouldn't want the transcript to say modified for everything, because then they wouldn't be able to use their reading modifications. Does that, or reading accommodations? So we've got work to do in that. Susan, what will your organization need to help students be able to check that box?
I don't think we really need to do. If you're telling students now, or when they are filing their FAFSA, that it's okay to check the high school diploma box, there's no question that it's, they have a true high school diploma. What we need to do is to get the word out to the colleges in Oregon and the financial aid offices that this is the way, this is the change, and we can certainly do that. So we can work on messaging for that particular group.
And that was one of the interesting things when the post-secondary office came in. They had issued guidance to post-secondary institutions previously that said if a state considers it a diploma, you can consider it a diploma. Mm-hmm. But that hadn't been communicated to the...
to the states?
Yeah.
Yeah, so our office can certainly do that. We can work on notifying the financial aid offices so it's all very clear.
And do others have other ideas about how to get that word out for kids this year?
Well, we'll certainly tell all the YTP students we're working with.
Mm-hmm, great.
Yeah, the one thing I can think of that might still be a little bit of a problem is for students with modified or extended diplomas who go to an out-of-state college, getting that word out to other state financial aid offices will be a little bit more difficult. So we may have to find a way to provide language to the students themselves that they can share with a financial aid office and a contact person in Oregon who can say, yes, no, it's okay. So we can talk about that as well, as where that contact should be.
Anything else on this topic? Sit here. So there's three other pieces of work that I hoped that we could talk about today. Susan had suggested that it would be good for the group to start thinking about resources that could be gathered in a more central place for people to access them, because we've talked a lot about the challenge of communication and information dissemination. We also need to talk about the next step on transcripts and how we work on that uniformity, hopefully without any kind of a mandate or legislation or rulemaking. And then when our task force completes, we will need to make recommendations to the legislature. And those could be for legislation, or they could be just, you know, continuing to talk with the department and school districts. So I wanted to open those three things up to all of you to see what your ideas and suggestions were and where you think we should go. And the good news is I don't think we're going to have a very long meeting today. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful outside, so...
Well, for myself, I think the most logical solution to the whole transcript is to have a standard across the state as to a database that's used for transcripts that can show the modified classes. And I just can't remember how many $100 million they said that was going to cost.
Seems like there are a lot of zeros in that.
Yeah.
With the transcripts, one of the things that might be good to do, we have an NCS and the course code catalog, and sometimes that becomes a problem with the HQ piece. Somehow a database that has the code and the course title and the appropriate HQ requirements so that when selecting course codes, the building principal knows, or the counselor, or whoever's doing that, master scheduler knows what to use, so they're not accidentally using the wrong ones. So we've taken Beaverton, what we've just finished up, going through all the codes, working with our HR department, identifying the codes, the course titles, and then writing course descriptions and identifying in the course catalog if it's a modified diploma or a modified course or an extended alternative certificate course. And so we've done that using those codes, but it's quite a bit of work to go through, and you having a resource like that I think would help, because then you'd have standard course titles because they're all connected with these national codes. So it's how do you use those codes and those titles to align with maybe these are the ones you can use. And then if I were a receiving district, I would know when I see that course title, I know that it's modified, or I know it's an alternative certificate course.
And that could that course title apply to the same, so a kid goes to a regular world history class, 10th grade world history class, and everybody in the class, most everybody in the class is earning a regular credit for that. But you've got a couple of kids that have modifications and it's a modified credit. So would they fit in that class, but their course title on the transcript would be different?
Their course title would be the same, but then there would need to be whether used, we need to come to agreement about using an asterisk or the M, because some places use an M next to the grade, which indicates it's been modified. So it works easy if you have a separate class, but if you, you know, if you have a student who's taking it under modified conditions, I think across the state we have to come to an agreement about how we're going to indicate that that course is modified and make sure that it complies with, there's been a lot of laws, legal cases around this issue and kind of how the transcripts looks and making sure not indicating the student has a disability but just the modified piece. So, but looking at that and just saying this is how we're going to do it across the state would probably make the most sense. And then on the other side, the alternative classes, having the course codes, titles, so that people know what they are.
Because our district does something similar. We use the dash M next to, but it's also on their schedule and on the transcript, so that the teacher knows that, okay, these students here are taking this class for modified curriculum versus a standard curriculum. And we have just started doing it in our district, and it works really well for us. But then if they go to, like, Newport High School, where they use the asterisk versus the dash M or the dash E, or vice versa, they come to us, I have no idea. That I had no idea until this meeting that the asterisk meant modified curriculum. No idea. So, I mean, I think that, like what you were saying, having it be something statewide. I know that we're an international baccalaureate school, our high school is, so all of our stuff says IB next to it, so it's, you know, HL, IB math. I know that's kind of a state thing, so I don't see why it couldn't be something like that where it's statewide, where everyone is dash M or asterisk or whatever the case may be.
So is this something that the board could do under its own authority, impose this, you know, this kind of standardization, Jen?
Hello, Jan McComb for the record from the Department of Education. I shared an administrative rule with Representative Gelser on this subject, and there's an existing administrative rule that says that modified courses shall be clearly indicated on the transcript. I think that's what it said. And we didn't specify whether it would be an asterisk or an M. I think it's something we could do. I think we would want to get some feedback from the school districts in terms of their computer software and whether it would cost money. I know that some school districts have invested in certain kinds of software where they've already spent a lot of money to do an M or an asterisk. And so we would want to know, you know, the fiscal impact of making that change. or whether it could just be footnoted at the bottom of the document what that meant. You all know much better than myself in terms of how you use this and who's looking at it and, you know, what would work best for them, if this is teachers or whether it's counselors or higher ed. But we would want to kind of keep that into consideration. But I think the State Board does have the authority to do it, to answer your question.
It could be done over time, right? I mean, you know, it wouldn't need to be done overnight, but it seems like it just seems logical that we should have it in a standardized form, and certainly would make it much easier for outside entities like higher ed or the military or whatever.
We would just want to make sure there weren't some unintended consequences that we didn't know about.
But I think Matt had talked about previously the ability on some transcripts you see the progress that the student is making towards the diploma, and right now on a lot of the transcripts it defaults to one or the other rather than showing your progress towards if you're eligible for a modified diploma, but what's your progress towards the standard diploma, so you can be keeping tabs on if you can hit that goal and make realistic choices later. I mean, in that presentation you showed what happened to a transcript when you switch it over and all of a sudden it looks like the kid is really
on a regular diploma versus a modified diploma.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there has to be a way, because I know the way we do it is terrible, because once a kid is on a modified diploma, that you have to guess, are all 24 credits modified? It's just one, because we stopped putting modified when we started doing that, so that has to change. I'm still baffled that one template could cost millions of dollars. I don't understand that. I mean, I was an English major, maybe that's why. But it doesn't seem like a huge task to have Oregon transcripts. I mean, there need to be some agreements to get to that point, but why would they not look exactly the same in every single school district? And whether it's an M, I don't know. Maybe because it makes too much sense.
Well, I think there would be some cost, you know, just in you know, changing the form and the software, especially if you're using something that is not easily, you know, changeable. But it shouldn't be that major of a cost, I would think.
Morgan, is it hard to survey districts about if they're using an M or an asterisk and if it's expensive in their software to...
I think there's only about three or four... I know there's at least two big software programs that everybody uses, and then there's, like, you know, some of the smaller districts have antiquated things, so it shouldn't be too hard to figure out.
Is that something you guys might be willing to help us with, to talk to them about?
They might.
Okay.
They definitely might.
What's Beaverton use for their...
It's an asterisk. And so we've had pretty extensive conversation about it because it goes all the way down to the elementary level, because we've been having conversation about some of the decisions that we make at the elementary level and how that impacts the high school path for the student. And so we're trying to be as clear as possible about how if we're accommodating or modifying, and we use an asterisk. And then down at the bottom, there's like a footnote that indicates it. And I think in North Clackamas previously, they did an asterisk as well.
Did it have to? Do you know what had to happen with the program? What's your student information?
We have Synergy, a lot of people have Synergy. And so I don't know how hard it would be. It's kind of like ESIS, where it took, you know, you put in the fix and it takes like a year to get it and then costs like $1 million. So I don't know how hard it would be. to make that change. I would envision that that wouldn't be as hard, because if you have a program set up for an M versus an asterisk, you know, I think the bigger difficulty might be them fitting the two diploma tracks, but I understand the purpose of doing that, because if you have a kid who, we're talking about students who are served in the resource room coming back, and what they, you know, what's the reality for them? The one thing that happens, and I think you brought it up, is with the transcript, you only have so much room as well. That becomes another limiting factor. So you want a one-page, single-sided transcript, and you have to think about how much stuff you can put on there in order to have that there.
I'm curious, is this an 8.5 by 11 page? Is that what we're talking
about? Yeah.
So could it be modified to print on 11 by whatever the big size is?
No,
I don't know. Ours will print on 2 pages.
Okay.
You know, but I don't know as far as modifying the size.
I know they try to keep as like a minimal amount of information on there.
I know for art, like, we have Sassy. We're moving to Synergy next year, I think.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yay. I know for us, to create the dash M, we actually had to have our programmer go in and create a bunch of different course numbers that were specifically set to identify what was a dash M. She did that for our building, and then the other districts got, you know, the other high schools, their person did the same thing. It took a while for, you know, to go in and hand it to each one, and every time we have a student that decides, okay, we're going to modify health is going to be modified, we have to go in and create a new course number. So it definitely is a little bit time consuming for us. I know for our system, there's a lot of extra space on our transcript. There's a huge box that no one uses, that we don't have anything in there. We asked our technology department if that was something that we could fill with test scores, or if to note a key or something to note that this was elective or this was modified, and they said it couldn't be done. So I realize there's probably going to be some issues with formatting, but I don't know, with Synergy, it'll be different.
Is Synergy and SASE, are these databases that are shared by multiple states, or are these standalone programs that are just to specific to the school?
Synergy comes out of Colorado, so there's several districts that were utilizing the SIS, the Student Information System, previously. And so there was we had ESIS, which went out, was bought by Pearson, and then went out. And so they got the bid from most districts, Synergy did, but they've struggled with the demand and the level of need that districts have. So they haven't been quite ready to roll out what they promised. And so things that were supposed to be up and running, I mean, it's much like many of the other things we've seen with technology recently. It's just not ready. So one of the things we ran into is, you gave the example of the student who's taking world history, but maybe under modified conditions. So you run into having to potentially generate a different course title. Well, then you run into a grade book issue for a teacher who now has 3 grade books for one class, which is a whole other reporting nightmare for the teacher and the parent, because if the parent's going in to look at parent view, which course do they select? And it's kind of...
The reason I bring this up is we have a database, it's called AWARE in Oregon. We call it ORCA, it stands for Oregon Rehabilitation Automation Caseload Management, but it's shared by 15 or 20 different states. And so if we have something we want specifically changed for Oregon, they have to pass it by all the other states to determine if that's something the other states want. And so we've had some changes we really need, but the other states won't weigh in, and so we're kind of out in the cold on that. So.
That happens. So, like, Beaverton is on its own instance, so we kind of work with Synergy directly, but there's kind of a consortium in Washington County, so those directors or those districts have to work together to come and make an agreement to a change. So that has an impact. So if you're a district who wants to make something very specific for your own district, you may have to get the agreement by the 10 other districts you're working with in the consortium.
So it sounds like maybe what we can do in terms of next steps on this is to work with OSBA to figure out how people are doing things and what the cost might be to switch things around, and continue conversations with the department about
partially communicating about the rule that already exists that says we should do this.
Mm-hmm. We'll also decide what the standard would be
yeah.
in the process for determining that.
And then within those, it sounded like the issue of standardization across the state, a course code catalog that makes it easier for people to pull down the appropriate codes, that standardization of the M or the E or the asterisk or whatever else, the how do you keep track of where a student is from place to place. You miss anything?
No.
Anything else on transcripts?
No, but that last piece is the key. Until it's standardized where a registrar can pull down a code, we'll keep landing in the same place. And I know that's why my district said we're just going to say modified and not worry about it. Because short of that, it's relying on the teacher to communicate with the registrar in any kind of timely fashion. And so a lot of times, courses were definitely modified and never transcripted as modified, which is a little troubling. But I don't think you can solve it without solving it on the front end. That kid shows up on a teacher's class list, and it's already modified. The grade that will have to go to the transcript ultimately is modified, just when that teacher turns in the grade, and then we've solved it, I think.
Susan, did you want to talk a little bit about your idea about the resource gathering?
Well, it seems to make sense that whether it's a website seems to be the most reasonable place to do it, to have a website that has comprehensive list of information for students and their parents, so that instead of going to OSAC for pieces of the information, then in individual colleges for information, the Department of Education, OUS, that the information would be in one spot. And if they have questions, point them to one spot instead of six.
So that'd be similar to the I think at one of our first meetings, Sally presented the transition resource book, and we talked about how difficult it was to get the book all the way down. That same concept, but
yeah.
more easily accessible on the internet.
Yeah. And I mean, we could certainly add a page to our agency website with information, but whether our agency is the place it should be housed or whether it's Department of Education or someplace else. That would probably be for legislature or another committee to decide.
Well, and the other group, Mike couldn't be here today, but a lot of those transition resources, it's the combination of that moving on to post-secondary, voc rehab, employment, it's that whole high school experience. So we might talk with Mike about the compact and the collaboration between DHS and the Department of Ed mm-hmm. to see if that might be a kind of a co-hosted kind of a thing that really is that one stop. How do I get ready to be an adult?
Yeah.
It'd be nice if there would be a way for agencies like Voc Rehab to have a page on that website where we could list, you know, what we do related to higher education and work, and mm-hmm. you know, the colleges could have a page. Tab browsing now, you can have lots of tabs and just
yeah. So are there other, like off the top of my head, I'm thinking DHS, Voc Rehab, post-secondary employment, diploma information, transition services, are there other agencies or entities that
well, the whole employment first push, I think that needs to be on there also.
Access brokerage services.
And probably OSAC as well, because we've got generic financial aid information.
Probably should be some general information on there around guardianship, social security, those things that are important for students or young adults when they're turning 18, and so their families know how to engage in that process.
Oh, military? So it sounds like that might be something that gets shaped into a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves us ahead of schedule for all the meetings that we've run over time. We'll have rollover minutes. Val Hoyle, who's my caucus leader, likes to talk about rollover minutes. So shaping recommendations for the legislature, and this would shape our next couple of meetings. I believe our report is due by October, September? Maybe September. So I want to make sure that we're able to have on the agendas the presentations and information that we need to finish the work of making the recommendations. Are there other topic areas that we haven't yet hit that we need to be sure that we do, or agencies, organizations, programs you'd like to hear from? Well, maybe as a next step for our next meeting, I'll try to go back through the notes from our last several meetings, and Victoria, if you don't mind, we can kind of put together a list of what it sounds like the general shape of recommendations might be, and send it out to all of you to critique and change and add. You might see things that probably should be there, and then at the next meeting we can talk about it in real time. But in the meantime, if people would be willing to dive into that a little bit and start adjusting, adding, subtracting. Does that seem reasonable?
Just a thought about the...
Hey, Sarah.
Oh. Yeah, Senator Edwards.
Yeah, so first of all, thank you for all the work that you've been doing on this. This is great. I think we're making great progress. In my mind, when I think about transition out of high school, particularly... when the transition involves transition into community college or university, we haven't talked or focused much on those institutions' preparedness or what they have in place to bring the student in. We've been kind of taking a high school focus, and I'm going to ask around because I don't personally have any experience with this, but I'm sure that there are people that would have perspectives that can maybe inform some future discussion. Because it seems to me that transition, while it starts in high school, it finishes somewhere else, and we haven't focused much on where it might finish. And maybe there's nothing to be done, I don't know. But some tells me that there probably is work to be done.
I think that's a really good point, and an important one too, because I think that actually is specifically part of our charge and a piece that we've missed. So the whole conversation about this task force started with some disability service coordinators on campuses talking about both the documentation that they needed students to bring with them so that they could access the supports that they needed to be successful in the post-secondary institution, and how better to communicate with students about how to apply for and access that information, and how to improve that communication. So maybe for our next agenda, I'll circle back and we can bring some of those disability service officers and maybe a student or two that's currently in a community college or university to talk about what's working and what's not. Would that fit that need, Chris?
Yeah, that's kind of the type of stuff that I'm thinking about.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Chris. I was actually going to ask the question before you jumped in of, are there on this task force any people from community colleges or universities? Yeah. So that has, that I think would be good to sort of shift in that direction and see, also as we're looking at legislation, if there are any statutory barriers that they face in that world that would, you know, perhaps we could alleviate.
And Clint, we cut you off.
That's okay. I was just going to say, because like Boca Rehab has its own website,
mm-hmm.
and so for the clearinghouse, we could have a link, you know, on our website. You could have a link on your site to take them right to that.
Yeah, and post-secondary services and accommodations available at post-secondary institutions, and how to access that should also be part of that clearinghouse information.
Yeah. Yeah, something that I came up against when I helped the young man get the GED that I talked about is that we asked for accommodations for him to be able to take the GED, and he had ADHD or has ADHD and also has a math disorder, and we have a great disability liaison at Chemeketa in our community, and she's like, well, it's going to take too long to try to get him accommodations based on his math disorder, but I can push through accommodations for his ADHD really quick, so let's concentrate on that. So I guess knowing what the colleges need as far as documentation mm-hmm. would help a lot, you know. Because mm-hmm. yeah. something that, you know, in the past we've had like learning disability evaluations done, but the evaluator may have used older evaluation materials and the college wouldn't accept those, the evaluation, because it was based on mm-hmm. other stuff that they don't accept. So really clear what they need, so we can be sure we get the right evaluations done.
Well, a challenge or maybe a limiting factor on that I run into is we have communications and we know what disability resources wants at these institutions, but 8 years ago it was really easy to get more of my seniors tested or retested with current testing because disability services have said we want updated testing within 1 year from this, and if they had their 3-year file review or annual review on their IEP in 10th grade year and it was a file review and all the testing's old, everything's old, and then the school district is looking around and as we're cutting, they're like, we have nobody to test. So now the option is, if you want disability services, you as a family need to go out and get your own testing. And if you go to any private practice to get that done, you're speaking in $500, $600, $800 for that testing.
Yeah.
That's a huge limiting factor. And students going through high school, they're getting these accommodations hopefully 100% through, and they're happening. And so the students aren't totally bought into what is allowing me to be successful within my general ed classes at the high school level. So they're like, oh, I'm just doing fine here. Everything's great. And then they hit that wall freshman year of like, holy cow, this is what it means to read this much a night, to do this much math work, to synthesize, whatever it is. So there's some, it's a wonderful conversation. There's some backtracking within that of like what that looks like and what that means. And I don't know if it's working with disability services to accept more of what's in the IEP and less of what's in the testing. Mm-hmm. That's been a big change as you go through this. We have this change of strengths and weaknesses outlook rather than on a learning disability scale, like how my IQ is and what my achievement is. And, you know, our old school method of 2 standard deviations that says you have a learning disability, that's still what disability resources is working under, but school districts aren't identifying students under those kind of criteria anymore. So the criteria isn't matching what high school or maybe it's like K through 12 criteria isn't matching college criteria. And so you have this discrepancy between what people are using to document what's going on and what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and maybe it would be in the IEP because we have to write those. That's the federal mandate. That's like an annual thing that's happening that might be able to support students and address the shortfall of money for people to test all these students.
Yeah, we come up against that in Voc Rehab because we can't use just IEP records to determine someone eligible. There has to be an evaluation done by a licensed treatment provider of some sort, and it generally has to be current within the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I often get, Well, I often get records from the schools that don't have any kind of an evaluation, or the evaluation was done by someone that doesn't have the credentials for me to use it. So I often have to get a new learning disability evaluation, which, of course, benefits the student, because if they do go on to college, then they've got something current.
Yeah.
The other thing that happens is the accommodations that we utilize in K-12 education don't always translate to the university level. So that becomes another barrier potentially for student success at the post-secondary level, because they're used to certain accommodations that are they're not approved when they're in the university system. So having clear understanding of what is going to be allowed, so that we're working to in a kind of protective environment, work with students to access those particular accommodations so that they're set up to be successful when they get to post-secondary. Because it's great that we have a range of accommodations we can use so a student can graduate from high school, but I think they're running into a barrier when they get to the post-secondary level because those tools are no longer an option.
And some college professors are reluctant or unwilling to accommodate students, and I've even come across this with Job Corps. I had one student who was not allowed to use his IEP accommodations, and I had to call and talk to them and remind them that they're federally funded and that they have to, you know, observe those things. And
well, that sounds like a good agenda. We'll do that next time. That's a lot. Okay. Anything else that should be on a future agenda as we finish things up?
I just need to clarify, actually our report is due July 1.
Oh! Hey.
And also we are to submit any recommendations about achievement compacts to the OEIB by July 1.
Oh.
If we have any such recommendations.
Anything about what we were thinking about when we... I think that was in there because
the achievement, the modified and extended diplomas are listed out. I think they're broken out on the achievement compact right now.
I think they're in the five-year,
five-year cohort.
But I think what we were looking at is that there was some conversation about achievement compacts and the kind of where the opportunity gap or the achievement gap is listed, to kind of make sure that students with disabilities were included in that discussion, including that enrollment in post-secondary. I think the other piece around this had to do with the dual credits and students leaving high school having already earned college credits, because many kids that are on IEPs could in many districts be earning college credits in high school, and are we reaching out to those kids to say, hey, you could take this child development class or you could take this foods class and end up with a college credit and your food handler's license in the process. So I think that's where that came from. So we can add that to the agenda next time too, and we'll just kind of send around what information is currently on the achievement compact and where kids with disabilities are called out and not. And maybe that's something we can all roll around in our ad heads and do a little bit of communicating in between, because that means the May meeting is going to be important if we're going to meet the July 1st deadline. July 1st.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
I was in the higher ed committee. I bet you guys changed it. Anything else on getting ready for recommendations in future meetings? That is our agenda for today. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
Do you want to meet during Ledge Days in May or separate from Ledge Days?
I think whatever works to get the most people here. So in the past, this Friday morning has worked well, and I don't believe that... Are you on the EdSub, Ways and Means EdSub? Senator Edwards, you're on the higher ed, on the Education Ways and Means Sub, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Do they meet on Friday mornings?
Let me see if it's on my calendar. In May?
Yeah.
What days are ledge days?
It's the last
28, 29, and 30.
Oh, okay.
So it would be the 30th.
I don't have my individual committee schedule in my calendar yet, so.
You know what, though, since that's so late and we're early in the month and we have to have our recommendations by July, we should probably try to meet earlier in May.
I was thinking originally, I think we talked about May 16th, so you want to keep it on that Friday if that's possible.
Yeah. Okay, great.
I think that makes more sense.
And Fridays, we've gotten the most participation from people on the Friday morning. That's it. I just wanted to say thank you to everybody for continuing to show up and send emails and send ideas. This has been my favorite task force that I've gotten to participate in because things we've talked about here have ended up in things changing twice so far. So thank you all very much.
Thank you for your
support. Yeah, things are happening. This is great. Thank you.
And with that, I think we're adjourned.
Yeah.